Hello and welcome to Journey of the Monkey King with myself, Kweeba, and my friend MJ.
Yo!
You didn't get clipped off that time, so yay.
Awesome. Yay. I will modify my greetings to appease the dark recording gods.
I'm not sure if clipped is the right term. I don't know what audio terminology is.
I don't know. There's a reason that I love doing this podcast, and it's because you do all the editing work. And I just, and all the research work, and all, I just get story time.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah, yeah, everything is, all the credit goes to me.
Yeah. Kweeba is the brains behind the operation. I'm just thinking of that Simpsons scene now, you know, with my brains and your assistance. that's the dynamic we have here.
I'm not going to dispute this. I'm just going to take the credit.
Take it. Take all the credit. You deserve it.
Yeah, so this episode is going to contain mentions of cannibalism. No one actually gets eaten. And also, something that I'm not sure in the text is a masturbation joke, but when we get to it, we're definitely going to make a masturbation joke ourselves.
110%. Oh, we're hyping it up now. It better be a good one. Better bring my wank joke game here.
In the last chapter, Sun Wukong and Zhu Baji rescue Tripitaka from the Yellow Wind King. It's autumn now, and Tripitaka, Wukong, and Baji find their paths blocked by the flowing Sands River, which is 400 kilometers wide, and the water is too turbulent for a boat to safely cross. This is a problem.
Yeah.
I can't read a distance figure like that without having to look up things for comparison.
Oh, the measurement notes. Woo!
So I looked up what the widest river in the world is. Unsurprisingly, it's the Amazon. And obviously, the width of a river varies considerably along its course and depends on the weather and time of year. So trying to put an exact figure on the width of a river is kind of a meaningless exercise. But I googled around anyway, and a couple articles give the Amazon's width at its widest point in the dry season as 11 kilometers and 40 kilometers in the rainy season.
This is more of a sea.
So, well, there is also the Rio de la Plata, which lies between Argentina and Uruguay, which is arguably either a river or an estuary. This is apparently a point of contention, but that is 220 kilometers wide.
Okay, so we're beating these guys pretty comprehensively.
Yeah, and there's places where you could argue the mouth of the Amazon, you could argue, is like 300 kilometers wide, but that's from the edge of one of the mouth from, like, you know, the Amazon breaks into multiple streams at that point with loads of islands and huge sections of land in the middle, and that's measuring the two furthest,
including
points,
the land.
Yeah,
which does seem like cheating.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah.
So the biggest in reality that we can kind of argue is a river is the Rio de la Plata, 220, and this is 400.
This is a wide-ass river.
This is an exceptionally wide river.
Yeah.
So the three of them are trying to figure out how to get across when suddenly a monster jumps out of the water and runs straight at Tripitaka.
Fuck.
Yeah, this always happens.
Don't hang around outside. Is the horse okay, Kweeba?
The horse is going to be fine.
Okay, good.
But the monster has a messy, fiery red hair and indigo skin, and his voice is like thunder. He's wearing a goose down cape, and he has a necklace around his neck made of 9 skulls.
I just love the attention these monsters pay to aesthetic.
So he tries to attack Tripitaka with a priest's staff he has, but Wukong is able to pull Tripitaka away, and Baji jumps in with his rake to hold off the monster.
Nice. Also, I love how Wukong has all these superpowers, and Zhu Baji has a rake.
It's a magic rake. It was
a magic rake.
It was
made
by Erlang. It was. It's a good rake.
I know, but it's just like, yeah.
Sorry, not Erlang, Laozi.
Laozi, yeah. Yeah, I just love how, you know, Wukong has this really elegant, huge staff that he can just tuck behind his ear as a little pin, and, you know, he can just spring into battle, and it's all very streamlined and stuff, and, you know, the Jubaji's gone to Woody's. Yeah, it brings me great joy.
So where was I? The monster and Baji keep fighting while Wukong stays with Tripitaka to protect him, but he can't sit still watching the fight. He starts grinding his teeth and rubbing his hands together and jumping up and down. Tripitaka begs him to stay, but he can't hold back and he runs in to join the fight.
Impulse control.
So, suddenly faced with a 2-to-1 fight, the monster dives back into the river to flee, and Baji gives out, telling Wukong that he would have won if he'd given Baji a bit more time. Wukong laughs and he says that since they captured the Yellow Wind King a month ago, he hasn't had any chance to play with his rod again. And that is the phrasing the book uses.
Oh.
That is the phrasing.
That's the phrasing. Oh dear.
He has not had any chance to play with his rod.
It's all the more impressive now that he can tuck it behind his ear.
Oh, Christ.
We hyped up the masturbation joke, and now I can't think of one, and it's just going to be... I will warn you that at some point during this episode, I may just blurt out one.
So, anyway, moving on.
Moving swiftly on from the impressive rod.
The two of them head back to Tripitaka, who asks if they captured the monster. He reckons the monster probably lives here, so there's a good chance he knows the best way to cross the river if they can catch him.
So they could have just asked the fucker for directions.
In fairness, the monster attacked first. Yeah. This time.
Why does it always have to be a conflict with these people?
So Baji tells Wukong to go ahead while he looks after Tripitaka, but Wukong laughs nervously and says he's not very good with water.
Oh, weakest. We've discovered the kryptonite. He's the Wicked Witch of the West.
He cannot swim. He still has not learned to swim.
Well, he can fly over the water. Fucker can fly.
Yeah, but that won't help them get the monster.
Yeah, true. True. Though he could fly over the water and leap down and reach down with his massive rod.
God.
It's still not there. I'll get there.
But Baji was a naval commander. He was the Marshal of the Heavenly Reeds. He can handle a bit of water, but he's still a little worried that the monster might have some family down there too.
Hmm. Good point, Baji.
Pilgrim tells him that if things look in any way bad, then Baji can retreat to the shore where Wukong will be waiting in ambush.
Sweet.
So Baji dives to back in and picks a fight with the monster again, asking him who he is. And he has a poem, of course. It's 51 lines long this time, a little shorter than Wukong's or Baji's.
Is there any, you know, like quixotic puns? Anything that might have made Aunt Niu cry?
Not that there was no crying mentioned in the footnotes, I'm afraid.
Okay, that's a shame.
So, like Baji, he got a job in heaven after learning the secrets of immortality, and he had the title the Curtain Raising Captain.
I'm sorry.
Just sounds like it's just a really silly title.
It's just they're such bullshit military titles. I'm sorry. It's a sort of. Oh, yeah.
I don't know if there's any other story behind these titles. Like, if they make more sense in Chinese, they probably do.
Probably. We are dealing with lots of fun things get lost in translation, like puns and rap battle poetry.
So, we have met this guy before. If you recall, at the Heavenly Peach Festival...
Don't go to the Peach Festival!
He broke a jade cup, and the Jade Emperor was so furious about it, he sentenced him for execution.
Don't go to the Peach Festival. Just picture clapping emojis there. I'm not gonna clap on audio. It does sound fucking awful, but just don't go to the Peach Festival. Bad things happen there.
The only reason he wasn't executed is because the Naked Feet Immortal begged the Jade Emperor to spare him, so he was banished instead.
Okay, for breaking a cup.
For breaking a cup, yeah.
Don't go to the Peach Festival. Everyone just loses their shit at the Peach Festival. It's like you know when you go home for Christmas, there is just that point you need to leave before the argument begins. Spend 20 minutes at the Peach Festival if you must, and then fuck off.
Yeah, I really think that, like, after everything that happened with Wukong, the Jade Emperor was just like, from now on, every Peach Festival is going to be perfect.
We're all making up for...
If you use the wrong fucking fork, I will have your head off.
Don't go. Just say you're sick.
So, Guanyin has already recruited this guy and promised him to join the pilgrimage with Tripitaka, but he doesn't mention that part in his big long poem, and Baji doesn't ask either.
Communication, guys, come on.
So, instead, he threatens to eat Baji, and he says if Baji is too coarse to eat right away, he'll chop him up into mincemeat and cook him more slowly. Baji takes great offense at the idea that his meat would be tough enough to have to be stewed.
That's the part that bothers him.
Yeah, he calls himself mouth-watering.
Okay.
No, I am delicious.
Oh dear.
Yeah, it's a weird hill to die on.
Yeah, I mean... I guess if that's where your self-esteem is coming from.
He is literally a pig.
He is actually a pig.
So they fight for a couple hours underwater until Baji finally decides to feign defeat and flee. Wukong, who's been watching the whole time, can't restrain himself. And as soon as the monster is out of the water, he jumps at him. But the curtain-raising captain sees him coming and dives back in straight away.
That's what they teach you in curtain raising school.
How to get the fuck away. How to cut your losses. Yep.
How to make a graceful exit.
So Baji gives out to Wukong again. He calls him a banhorse plague, and he says if he'd waited till the monster was up to high ground, they could have blocked his retreat back to the water. And Wukong just laughs it off again, as he always does, and tells him to stop shouting. So they head back to Tripitaka, who says that Baji must be tired and they should maybe just tuck in for the night. Wukong volunteers to go beg for food for dinner, and it only takes him a few minutes to head out and come back with some.
Sweet.
So Tripitaka sees that he came back so quickly, and he says maybe they should ask the family he got food from about the river, considering they must live so close. It'd be a lot easier than trying to get information from the monster.
They seemed a lot more friendly. There were a lot fewer skulls mentioned in their decor.
Wukong laughs, and he has to explain that the house he got the food from was 3,000 kilometers to the north.
Right.
Because he can do that.
Yeah.
Baji thinks he's lying, but Wukong insists that kind of journey is trivial for him. So Baji asks the question, why can't he just carry Tripitaka across the river? And so we actually do get this addressed now. This is fully explained.
I'm so satisfied. This is the best day ever.
So Wukong points out that he's seen Baji flying as well. Can't he do it too? But Baji says that mortal bodies are too heavy for cloud soaring. He can't carry a human riding the clouds. And Wukong says that his cloud somersault is the same way as cloud soaring. It's just a bit faster, so he couldn't carry a mortal either.
It's a 1 pound coconut and a 5 ounce bird. I mangled that quote, but yeah, no, I'm satisfied now.
Humans and mortals cannot fly on the clouds. They're too heavy.
That makes a lot of sense, and I thank the author for finally addressing it.
So after providing a nice Watsonian excuse, Wukong goes on to basically just flatly explain the Doylist reasons as well.
Woo!
So,
love it.
Yeah, he says that it's necessary for Tripitaka to travel through all of these dangerous lands himself before he can find deliverance. He and Baji are there to protect his life, but they can't stop him from experiencing any hardship in the first place. If they went to Buddha by themselves, or Tripitaka went without having endured all this, Buddha wouldn't give them the scriptures anyway.
Was this novel by any chance serialized?
As far as I understand, or like as far as I've read, I haven't seen anything to suggest it was.
I'm just picturing a very terse author's note on Archive of Our Own. It's all.
It does feel very serialized in a lot of ways.
It does feel a little bit, yeah. Maybe it's just the way we're going through it, but
I think reading it is as well. Like, even at the end of every chapter, the narrator kind of stops to ask, "Oh, what'll happen next time? You better keep listening and find out."
Interesting.
So I don't know if it was published that way at all. Everything I find online seems to just suggest it was published as a novel.
Okay, maybe this is the way that the author liked to write.
Yeah, and like, I haven't read any other, you know, book contemporary to this. This could have just been the style of the time. I really have no idea. Anyway, Wukong rounds off his point with a little couplet. What's easily gotten is soon forgotten. So that's why he can't just fly Tripitaka to Buddha.
Interesting. That's fair.
So debate about their narrative roles settled, they all tuck in for the night. The next morning, they decide to try the exact same plan again. Wukong promises to hold back so they can get the monster into a better position this time. But unfortunately, the monster has figured out what they're trying to do at this point, and when Baji retreats, he simply does not follow him out of the water, because he is not a complete fool.
Smart guy. That's how he got all those skulls.
Specifically, actually, they did mention before, the skulls are from, like, previous monks who were on pilgrimages to find scriptures.
Yeah, love that for the extra bit of intimidation there. Although at some point you should probably ask, were you told to look out for a monk? Kind of feels like you might want to interrogate your monks these days. No?
Yeah. No, communication is not their strong suit.
No.
At the very least, it took like several days of them fighting each other, but at the very least, you know, Wukong and Baji did eventually sort this out themselves. They did figure it out eventually. Wukong, Baji, and Tripitaka regroup again, and Tripitaka starts crying and asks how can they ever get across, because he's getting a bit desperate at this point. They're all at a bit of a loss, and Wukong decides to just give up and ask Guanyin for help again.
Yeah, I guess Guanyin's got to be getting a little sick of this right now.
Yeah, probably, but Baji asks him to pass on his gratitude to her, because he hasn't actually seen her in person since he joined the pilgrimage.
Okay.
So Wukong heads off to the South Sea himself, and he explains the situation to Guanyin. One thing that I think is interesting is she calls him just Monkey, not like Monkey King or Stone Monkey or anything, just Monkey, which very few people in the novel actually do, even if it's common in like certain English translations. So I'm not sure if that's a sign of disrespect or just familiarity. I really can't make up my mind whether she likes him or hates him.
I can't either.
Anyway, what she does say to him is, Monkey, are you still acting so smug and self-sufficient that you refuse to disclose the fact that you're in the service of the Tang Monk? In other words, did you forget to mention the fucking pilgrimage again?
Which, is this something that I told you to do multiple times? Have you gotten me all the way down from fucking heaven to do this for you again?
He says, Wu Neng was the one who was talking to the monster. I presume the pilgrimage wasn't mentioned. So Guanyin explains that she had already spoken to the monster that lives there, and he's meant to join the pilgrimage, and they wouldn't have had this problem if they had just fucking talked to him.
Yep.
Wukong points out the monster is not coming out of the water anytime soon, so they're not really sure what to do about it now. Guan Yun calls over Mokfa and hands him a red gourd. She tells him to go back with Wukong to the Flowing Sands River, call Xia Wujing, which is the name she gave to the curtain-raising captain when she converted him, and to tell him to submit to Tripitaka, and then take the 9 skulls he's wearing around his neck, arrange them around the gourd to turn them into a vessel to ferry the pilgrims across the river. So she's sorting out the transportation issue as well.
I would be so pissed.
So they head back to sort out the mess, and as soon as Xia Wujing hears his Buddhist name being called, he immediately comes out to meet Moxa and is happy to hear that the scripture pilgrim he's meant to follow has arrived, but is less than happy when Moxa points him towards Wukong and Baji. He's been fighting them for the last few days, and they didn't mention a pilgrimage once. I will, in fairness, point out, neither did he.
Yeah, it just feels like all this could have been avoided, huh?
Completely. But yeah. Moxa convinces him to go over and submit to Tripitaka, and he apologizes for not having done so sooner. Baji calls him a bum, Baji calls Wujing a bum and asks him why didn't he do this in the first place, but Wukong laughs and he admits, you know, it's our fault for not saying anything. He's learning a little bit of humility.
Okay, he's not learning how to give an apology, but he's learning some humility, and it's baby steps for...
Yeah, he still sarcastically laughs off basically anything that's said to him, but he will admit fault
he's
sometimes.
Getting there. He's getting there.
Tripitaka invites Xia Wujing to join them, and Wukong shaves his head so that he looks like a proper monk. He looks the part so well that Tripitaka decides to nickname him Xia Monk. And all that sorted out, they use the skulls to create the magic boat and bring them across the river.
Skull boat, love it.
Skull gourd boat. Just, I'm not really sure what that's meant to look like.
I'm trying to picture it. It's entertaining. I'm not doing very well, but it's entertaining.
So that's chapter 22, and we're going to take a break for at least a couple of weeks. I'd say tentatively probably not be back before New Year's.
We're tired.
We are tired, and we've been busy with other stuff too, so. I do have a few notes and I guess reminders. Xia Wujing was the name Guan Yun gave to the former curtain-raising captain. It means sand awakened to purity. And the nickname Tripitaka gives him is Xia He Shang, which means monk sand, basically. Which this book renders as Xia Monk.
Okay, cool.
And the magic boat to bring them across the water is referred in the text specifically as a Dharma vessel. In this translation, at least, which is, I think, is kind of a pun, like it's literally a vessel, as in it's a boat. And then I think Dharma vessel is also kind of a Buddhist term. Like we talked before about how Guan Yin called the Tripitaka scriptures the great vehicle. So this is like a similar kind of idea, I think.
Okay, cool.
So it's something to bring you towards enlightenment. So it's a metaphor as well.
Elegant.
It's a metaphor that I don't fully understand, but I'm sure is meaningful. But, I'm sorry.
But it's elegant and cool. We'll
yeah.
We'll just glide through these waters of literary analysis and the big shiny skull boat of aesthetic.
And this is I think this kind of represents the kind of going into the largest section of the novel, in kind of, this is a lot of the setup is done now. We have our four main characters now. This is our band. Wukong, Baji, and Xia Monk, and Tripitaka are our four pilgrims, plus the horse.
Plus the horse. Don't forget the horse.
For the rest of the novel, these are the main characters.
Sweet.
I kind of wanted to take a break like a week or two ago, and I decided to wait until we got to this part to do it so that we'd have all the introductions out of the way when we pick it back up.
Yeah, it seems like a natural stopping point. Thank you so much.
Also, as a random thing, that mod I mentioned that I made last week,
Yes.
the Sonic Golf or Snolf mod. That's the name. Yes.
Snolf, I love it. Thank you for bringing that into my life.
It actually got a very tiny article in PC Gamer about it, just as a little like, hey, look at this like little funny weird thing, which is nice.
Nice. Well done, lady. That's awesome. I'm going to go around and tell everyone I know the Snolf lady.
But actually, I must clarify, I borrowed that name from there was originally a similar mod made for Sonic 2 and Sonic 3 by someone who goes by Dr. Melon on Twitter.
Okay.
So those are the original Snolf mods, and I basically made a 3D version for a different game.
It's very cool,
So
though.
I
Well
can't
done.
take credit for the basic idea or the name.
That's awesome, though.
So thanks for listening, and we will return soon enough.
Hibernate for the rest of 2020.
Yeah,
We're
sounds
done
like a
with
good
it now.
idea.
Awesome. Thank you. This was awesome, as always.
Cool. Bye.
Bye.